back. I'm Gervier Brahm here with Jamal Karsandu, and we are Screen Off Script. This week, we're getting into Drive Away Dolls and reflecting on all the major movie and TV news of the week.
Muad'Dib, the prophet, the one who points the way. These are our own religious patterns, aren't they? This is our doing. What if Paul Atreides were still alive?
Enough. This must not come
out. All right. In our first segment, we're going to be talking about the news. If you want to skip around to our review of Drive Away Dolls, we got timestamps in the description. Chumut, so a lot of news. Do you want to start with Dune? I feel like we should almost like recap on the success of everything that's been going on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just to start off with that, obviously it's like the number one movie everywhere. Look at, tell me if I'm wrong, but this feels like the first time since Barb and Hammer that something has taken over pop culture.
Yeah, and it didn't take two movies. It didn't take an organic viral marketing campaign. I think it literally was just the fact that word of mouth spread. Referrals were made from the first Dune movie, which kind of had a really weird release, you know, both in the theater and digital streaming service. And it was almost as if the experience of watching this opening weekend was a massive payoff for people that enjoyed the first Dune movie.
Yes.
And now we're seeing the domino effect of that, you know, go further, where there's repeat viewings. People are telling friends, you have to watch this movie. Oh, go watch the first movie if you haven't.
Yeah.
It's not too late to jump on the bandwagon. That's the kind of stuff we're seeing right now.
I completely agree. I feel like this is really the ultimate testament of word of mouth. And as much as the reviews kept coming out and just were completely positive, I think that wave of positivity just radiated into the project. It's kind of interesting. I saw somebody talking about how, like, you know what? Had this movie come out in October during the busy award season, maybe this would have got washed a little differently. Maybe it wouldn't have had the same kind of legs. But for now, for it to come out in March, for it to come out pretty at a relatively slow season, almost to the point where not too much came out in February, and it felt like there was room for anticipation to grow for when Dune was coming out. And when it did, it absolutely delivered in every way possible. But more than that, you're seeing it deliver across the board. There's not one, like, I see so little criticism, anybody really talking down about this movie. And I will say, like, I'm sure that will come down the line when, you know, it's come down the high that everybody's on. We'll be like, oh, you know what? When I think about it, this is something that I would criticize. But right now, it seems so unanimously loved. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if you kind of go through this kind of process when it comes to just watching films in general. But, like, I enjoy watching trailers. I enjoy posters and, you know, hype leading into a movie. But I don't let that penetrate my bubble. I live in my own bubble when it comes to movies because I love cinema so much, right? And it's only now that I've watched Dune Part 2 a second time that I've allowed the moment to really kind of show itself to me in terms of what I think this is. And that's a cultural event. It's a generational movie that I think could have a massive impact generations from now when people are, hey, that was my kind of Star Wars moment when I was a teenager. And
absolutely, even to kind of round that out, this is absolutely the kind of movie that nerds will obsess about for the next decade, for the next couple of decades, right? Like, this is like the kind of movie that people will make their personalities. You will see tattoos. You will see cosplay. You'll see everything that comes with this kind of territory. It's cool, though. At the end of the day, something like this has to exist in the space.
Yes.
And for it to be great, what more could you ask for, right? Like, this could be a situation where it's like, you know, what we've been living with for the past couple of years with comic book movies.
Yeah.
It feels like there was like a lull that's been happening. And look at us. We're out of the lull and into this new fun little territory. And this is what keeps happening. This is a cycle of Hollywood where like a big blockbuster comes around. This one delivered in spades. It hasn't happened like I feel like this in quite a while.
Yeah, 100%. I watched it a second time. I'm looking forward to watching it a third time. And just that alone, coming out of opening weekend, having watched it a second time, there are things that we didn't even really discuss in our review podcast that really stuck with me more on that second viewing. Firstly, it was the Hans Zimmer score, but also the sound effects and the sound editing, which really helped magnify the size of the spectacle that is on the screen.
I think that's a good extension of what we were talking about last week with the IMAX experience of it all. This feels like such a big IMAX experience, and a lot of that, it isn't just visual.
Yeah.
It's the audio experience that you're getting from this movie. It's at times like almost part of the experience. It's almost like overwhelmingly so, in a good way.
Yeah.
It's like you're flooded with so much sensory overload that it's very fun.
Yeah. And the other thing that really stuck with me after the second viewing was Zendaya's performance, but specifically in the last, I'd say, 15 minutes of that final act.
For sure.
And I'd realized this when I was watching it. The final 15 minutes, she has no dialogue. Mm. She's doing all this acting with her face and her eyes, and she's experiencing, her character is experiencing so much as this movie ends. And I just thought, wow, like, this is Zendaya at her absolute best. And it kind of really got me more excited and more invested in her as an actress moving forward.
100%. Another person I do want to talk about is Austin Butler. I feel like we talked about him a little bit last week, but I had this great quote from Denis Villeneuve talking about casting him. He said, Fade needed to be the kind of charismatic figure with a strong sex appeal. And I knew Austin had that. Did I know that Austin would be able to go that dark? I was wishing, but when we started to do the first camera test, it was an explosion of joy for me because it was beyond my expectations. It's funny because as much as I really enjoyed Austin Butler's performance, so many people are killing it in that movie.
Yeah.
It feels like par for the course of how good the movie is in overall. Mm. But in retrospect, when you do look at Austin Butler's character, he's got a very specific look.
Yeah.
And especially when you look at the Harkonnens, like, they look so specific. With him, he's the most polished final boss looking version of that.
Right.
That we've been offered so far.
Yeah. And just a known Austin Butler, I just recently watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and seeing the arc of this actor go from a very much minor role in that movie, in the kind of, which really comes to life in the final third, to obviously getting all the accolades for Elvis, and now saying, actually, in this movie, I don't need to be the lead. I'm going to play a villain that gets killed off.
Yeah.
This guy has absolutely killed it in the last couple of years.
Absolutely. And I think that goes to boost Quentin Tarantino's ego even a little bit more.
Yeah.
It just goes to show that look at how much he can pick stars so early. And especially, we're going to talk about that movie in one of our podcasts coming up. But truthfully, like, that is a great testament of just scouting, just seeing talent early on and watching them grow and become what they become now.
Absolutely.
Another piece of information that we got as far as Dune goes, Denis Villeneuve, he confirmed that he has 4 films in the works. One is Dune Messiah, the follow-up to Dune 2, Rendezvous with Rama, the project that was based on a novel, Cleopatra, supposedly with Zendaya, and a secret project. And apparently it's not set which of these films is going to be next, but the secret project, he said, needs to see the light of day quite quickly. But all these projects are still being written. We'll see where they go. I have no control over that. I feel like I've become like that Simpsons meme where it's like, what's in the box?
You can either have the washer and dryer where the lovely Smithers is standing, or you can trade it all in for what's in this box.
The box.
Like, yeah, I just want to know what that secret project is. I don't even care about anything else anymore. Right. I read that list. Once I heard secret project, I'm like, yeah, that's the one I want.
Isn't it also a testament to anyone that has been following the Denny, that career arc in terms of the films he's delivered? I don't want to compare it to The Dark Knight in that regard, but I felt like The Dark Knight was a very pivotal moment for Christopher Nolan.
I agree. I completely understand what you mean. Like,
yeah.
As far as like, yeah, mainstream appeal,
yeah,
where like it fits in like pop culture,
yeah,
the impact it's going to have. I completely agree with you. I absolutely agree. The thing that I kind of almost see it as even more is now Denny is going to be able to do whatever he wants.
Right.
Right. That's kind of the fun thing. We saw it happen with Christopher Nolan. We see it with a lot of our favorite directors because they get like a hit that solidifies them to the point where all these people are like, you know what? Yeah, make whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing, he was even talking about how like he's not going to be making any movies in somebody else's universe anymore. He was talking about Blade Runner, but that just goes to show he's not going to be, you know, taking on a superhero movie anytime soon. He's not going to be taking on anything else. It seems like the movie that we get from Dune is probably going to be the last time we visit a world that's not something he's thought of a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I mentioned before, he wants to do the Rendezvous with Rama. He wants to do Cleopatra. Those are existing works in a way.
Yeah.
But it'll be cool to see what he does with that. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Also, just from a studio perspective, you know, Warner Brothers has got such a massive hit on their hands with Dune. And there are so many Dune books. It's going to be interesting to see how this develops, where if the third movie is the final movie, if it's the final movie by Denny, if they use the IP and spin it off in the future, whether it be more movies or TV shows. But yeah, it's the same thing we saw.
I don't want to live in that world yet.
I don't.
You know what I mean? Like, I just want these Dune movies to kind of exist as they are.
Yeah.
At some point when they...
And we won't live in that world for a while yet, because obviously the third movie is the one that, you know, is going to be coming next. You know, Hans Zimmer has already started scoring the third movie, which is kind of wild that he's already kind of got an idea of the kind of music he wants to kind of elevate from what we've already seen. But you can kind of see the path we're heading, you know, towards, where these big studios, you know, are kind of trying to see how can we almost extrapolate from this cultural event and spin it off for this generation of fans of the movie.
Last thing I want to mention about Denis Villeneuve is that Cleopatra project. If it is paired with Zendaya, we talked about like pairings in Hollywood all the time, like the idea of, you know, Danny Kaluuya, Jordan Peele, that feels like a really strong pairing. I feel like they would get each other really well, and or they seem to get each other really well. And seeing what Danny would do with Cleopatra, just as far as like cinematography, iconography, creating a strong visual experience of Egyptian culture, I think that'd be pretty incredible.
Yeah, especially to make it look different than what we've seen with Dune, because again, it's in the desert.
Yeah,
right.
What can you do with that?
I know, right?
I'm very curious. Also, it's more grounded, it's more real, so we can see a lot of different factors kind of playing into that. It's a real person,
part of human history.
Yeah, biopic. It's just a completely different swing for him, but it's gonna be interesting.
And we've seen this already a little bit. You know, he's had his collaborators with Josh Brolin and Javier Bardem, and yeah, if he's going to be collaborating with Zendaya moving forward, again, I'm all about it.
100%. Next story I got, we're venturing into the superhero world. It's kind of the other movie that is one of the most talked about movies of the year, but on the completely other side of the spectrum. I'm talking about Madame Web. Dakota Johnson was talking about her experience of making Madame Web. She says, it's so hard to get movies made. In these big movies that get made, it's even starting to happen with these little ones, which has started to freak me out a little bit. Decisions are being made by committees, and art does not do well when it's made by committees. And she talks about AI and all this other kind of stuff that's kind of impacting it. But really, it feels like it's very understandable, because as much as we're boosting Dune right now and we're talking about how great it is, you know, Dune is like one weird pick from a studio executive away from being a complete disaster.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, imagine they're like, you know what, this Denny guy seems a little artsy. Let's go with somebody who actually gets this big blockbuster genre that we're trying to create. Like, that could easily happen.
Right.
Not like, right. And like, not to say like Madame Web had the potential to be like the greatest film ever, but I'm sure it was like one great or one massive choice away from being a
completely different
film.
Experience.
A much
movie.
Better film. Yeah. Right? Like, I'm sure that could exist too. What if it had a different director? What if a completely different person was writing that script? I think that alone, we could probably agree, would have changed the entire film.
Yeah. What's been interesting to see, not just from Dakota Johnson, but even from Sydney Sweeney's, you know, SNL skit, like, they've got to the point where the movie's released, they've done all their promotional obligations, and now they can just be very frank and honest about what the movie is, what it means, and what it has, how it impacted their career or lack thereof.
I think it's just calling a spade, right?
Exactly
like,
that.
It is what it is. Like, at the end of the day, it had its impact in pop culture. Unfortunately, it was a negative one.
Yeah.
But like that, you can't let that be a situation, especially like a Dakota Johnson who has already said that this isn't like the space she wants to be in anyways.
Yeah.
Like, well, it seems like that's what she's saying now, but she's basically saying like, I don't belong in that space. Mm-hmm. So let's see what else she does now.
Yeah.
Right. Same thing with Sydney Sweeney. She's already kind of rebounded so greatly just off that. She already has all these other W's that are in the works, and she has Immaculate coming out and all these other things that are kind of in her pipeline. This is kind of just a bump in the road.
Yeah. It's just nice to see them both be so very honest and transparent about everything. And again, we keep talking about how are we going to see change, when are we going to see change, and unfortunately, and or perhaps fortunately, from the outside looking in, people like us criticizing a movie like Madame Web is one thing. When it comes internally from the lead actors, that's when hopefully you start to see a paradigm shift in how decisions are made moving forward.
Absolutely. And the difficult thing is, at the end of the day, they can make whatever swings they want, but they're taking a chance, and they're like just really hoping for the best a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But still, speaking of comic book movies, and still part of this conversation, Chris Evans, he actually had brought up this idea that he said Marvel movies deserve a little bit more credit for making some phenomenal, objectively great movies, which is also a very good point, right?
Yeah.
He says superhero movies are not easy to make. If it was easier, there would be a lot more good ones. Great bar.
Yeah.
Right? Fantastic bar. I'm not throwing shade, but I've been part of a few that missed, obviously referencing Fantastic Four, and it happens, and making a movie is tough. More cooks in the kitchen doesn't make it easier. I don't want to highlight specific films in the Marvel catalog, but some of them are phenomenal, like independently, objectively great movies, and I think they deserve a little bit more credit. I completely understand that side of the argument as well.
Yeah.
We talk about superhero movies in like a way where like it does feel like we're leaving that era, right? But that's not to say they're not going to exist anymore or anything like that, but the high of highs might be over. But I completely agree with him as well. As much as we kind of, it's easier to crap on a superhero movie right now because we've seen so many of them.
Mm.
It's super oversaturated as a market.
Yeah.
But when a good one does come out, like when Deadpool comes out, I'm sure everyone's going to love that movie.
Yeah. And also, this is coming from a guy that played Captain America for over a decade.
Yeah.
Again, someone that's now very open and honest with his feelings, having gone through the experience, come out the other end. And obviously, you know, referencing the Fantastic Four experience as well. It's just refreshing to hear this. More, you know, I guess notable people in the industry speaking about this will only do a good thing moving forward. Hopefully, you'd like to think, when decisions are made from these studios.
But also, another thing is like superhero movies are so different than any other movie genre, right? At the end of the day, there's so much building that goes into them.
Yeah.
So Chris Evans is a fantastic example. When the first Captain America movie comes out, it's solid. It's not the best movie in the world. It's not the best movie of its genre.
Yep.
Nothing like that. But people gave Captain America some grace to be able to get better as a character, right? By the time we got to Winter Soldier, it was like, all right, cool, I'm all in on this guy. And then by the time you get into the Avengers movies, you're even more of a fan of this person, and it just grows more and more. And by the time you get to Civil War, it's just like, all right, cool, this is a guy.
Yeah.
And the character is closer to like a pro wrestler, in my opinion, than like a regular movie character, because as a fan base, we're all on this ride with them.
Yeah.
We're watching them kind of just get better or prove themselves or whatever. The real thing is that the superheroes right now just aren't getting over.
Yeah.
Right? They're just not getting over at the end of the day. And until some more newer ones or the newer versions of what we're getting, Fantastic Four, X-Men, those characters just have to get over in terms of pop culture. But we just haven't seen it right now. There's just not a lot of over characters right now.
And also, we got almost the perfect character arcs of some of these marquee characters, whether it be Iron Man and Captain America. We've seen a fantastic story being told with those two characters individually from beginning to end. And you're right.
It's also as a top guy, basically.
Yeah.
It's a very different perspective.
And it's like, okay, we know that Hugh Jackman's back out as Wolverine. When are we going to get the next version of these marquee characters, and what do their story arcs look like, and things of that nature?
Because
you're right, if you don't get them over early enough, then people aren't going to be on that ride for the next decade.
Yeah, 100%. And even right now, a lot of the term that is seemingly being thrown around a lot is franchise fatigue and comic book fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Dano had a great quote of this. He said, there are enough comic movies where you just know what you're going to get. Reading the script for The Batman, you knew it was a real film. I feel like that's the wording that is like the most important, because in his head, he can still rationalize that The Batman is a great movie over a superhero movie that's really good.
Right.
I think that's too like easy. It's something you can mix up.
Yeah.
But that's a very big distinction, if you ask me.
Yeah. It's kind of wild. Like, you could right now make two buckets of good superhero movies or comic book movies and bad ones. And what you're going to see consistently, I would think, in the good bucket are mostly auteur filmmakers, right? But films that are written really well, characters that are written really, really well, but the overall execution, there's a big kind of like disparity between that and the bad bucket. The bad bucket seems like quickly manufactured, get it out on this release date, lots of studio interference. It's been churned around with things like AI and other things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the ultimate quality just isn't there. And like, even with The Batman, it's like, you've already established some of these characters in previous films, so why wouldn't they be fatigued? Oh, it's a really good film.
Yeah.
And the Batman character is fantastic. The Riddler we've seen before, but never like this before.
Yeah.
We've seen these characters time and time again. The Batman's one of the most reproduced comic book characters in Hollywood history.
Yes.
And yet we are still interested because the execution is at a very high level.
Absolutely. It doesn't hurt that Batman is already culturally as iconic as you can possibly get. And people, at the end of the day, there are going to be some superheroes that will be given chance after chance after chance in a completely different way. Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, those would be my big three of like, no matter what happens, those will always get another shot.
Yeah.
Right? An Iron Man might not have been given another shot had Tony Stark not been great. The next Iron Man might not be so beloved, or it might not be given another chance anyways, right? Mm. Like, we never know what's going to happen with that. Same thing with Captain America. These are very different, like, tiers of superhero.
Right.
One great quote also that Paul Dano had was he says, as soon as the word content, and this is kind of what you were saying as well, but he says, as soon as the word content comes into what we do, meaning making movies or TV, it meant quantity over quality, which I think was a big misstep, and certainly don't need that as a viewer or as an artist. I think he perfectly encapsulates exactly what we're talking about. Like, it's very much, you know, I can understand why in an attention economy, why you would be so worried about putting out as much as possible. But obviously, it's a very watered down experience.
Yeah. I don't want to keep using Dune as an example, but we had to wait a few years for Dune Part 2. Apparently, we may be waiting until 2028 for Dune Part 3. And you know what? I'm absolutely okay with it.
Yeah.
Cook in the kitchen. Take your time. Yeah. Just deliver us a 5-star experience when it does eventually come out. We are happy to wait. You don't need to churn and burn this IP and this franchise for what it's worth every single year.
Look at all those shots, like the incredible shots that you get for Dune. Like, those aren't quickly thought out shots. Yeah. Those are well thought out, taking like very specific time. He talks about like the scene with riding the sandworm. Like, at the end of the day, that took them months,
4 months
to figure out. And like, that, it takes time. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Like, give them the ability to do that. And one thing I really like about Denny, like, very much understanding the same thing that happened with Christopher Nolan, going from Batman 1 to Batman 2 to Batman 3, he had projects in the middle of all of those. And that breaks it up, so you don't get stuck as one thing. Right? When you have a different movie that also breaks out, that not only makes your brand as a director bigger, but it makes the brand of whatever film you're putting out much bigger. So the next Dune will be even bigger than right now.
Yeah, and bringing it back to Marvel, that's why I am still a little hopeful of Marvel long term, because of what's happening this year.
Yeah.
We're just getting Deadpool and Wolverine, and that's it. And you would just like to hope that this year is where they start to strategically change how they deliver movies moving forward.
Yeah, I think Bob Iger also had this as a response, or as kind of a response. He said, first off, he dismissed Marvel fatigue. He says that audiences just want good films. If you build it good, they will come. I completely agree with that. He says Oppenheimer is a perfect example of that. Just a fantastic film. I don't love the connection that he's making with Oppenheimer. Like, I see it like loosely in terms of like relating it as a biopic or whatever, but I think the fight that Marvel's having, I hope they realize it's closer to a wrestling battle than a regular film battle, because Oppenheimer just has to get it right once. We're not going to follow the story of Oppenheimer.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, that's it.
This isn't a decade-long phase.
Yeah, it's one and done. Like, you really got to, as a superhero genre, you almost, like I said, you have to book it like pro wrestling. Get your characters over. You know, if this current wave isn't working, make them the sacrificial lambs for the next characters that you are going to get over. But that's pretty much everything for the news this week. Let's get into the movie that we're talking about this week. We're talking Drive Away Dolls.
I saw this movie once where they come across this box and they open the box.
The case.
And it was like really, really bad.
I just want to know what's going on.
I bet it's locked.
All right, gentlemen, so we're talking Drive Away Dolls. So basically, this movie is Ethan Coen's latest movie. It's starring Margaret Qualley. It's got a lot of cameos.
Yeah.
It's basically kind of Pulp Fiction-esque, where, you know, it's time to see what's in this briefcase, and we're following the briefcase story. It's that kind of movie. They get in the car. They get something in it. It's also interesting because it's also, while that story's happening, it's also having this fun little story that's happening with the characters about living in conservative times and areas while they're being lesbians. And it's also like elements of like psychedelic visuals and all this kind of stuff is happening.
Yeah.
And it's Drive Away Dolls. What'd you think of this movie?
I thought it was all right. There was moments where it made me laugh and chuckle. And then there were moments where things just didn't work, and certain scenes as they were playing out just didn't land for me. But I appreciate, I know you're a big fan of this phrase, I appreciate the swing that the film was trying to make here.
Me too.
Ethan Coen as a director, obviously, you know, going solo on this one. Normally we're used to seeing a Coen brothers production, and there's definitely elements of their previous work in this film.
Yeah,
I love a good road trip movie.
Yeah,
so that in itself, and it's pretty short. The film itself is like only like an hour and 20 minutes long. We were talking about length earlier on.
Yeah,
it's only an hour and 20, so it's a very easy watch.
Yeah,
and yeah, like I said, I thought it had its moments, and I, talking about cameos, Matt Damon, I thought, stole the show with one scene alone.
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? Because this movie has a lot of cameos. It's almost like, well, obviously with the Coen brothers, they have such an amazing pedigree.
Yeah.
That's so wide ranging. They get to work with everybody, right? Like, whether it's a Burn After Reading and like everybody in the world is like Frances McDormand, Brad Pitt, Everyone under the sun, like J.K. Simmons is in that movie. Like, that's just one movie. This is one that movie where, like, okay, cool. The advertised people are Margaret Qualley and Geraldine and Beanie. Then you have Matt Damon in there. You got Pedro Pascal's in this movie.
Coleman Domingo.
So, yeah. Like, it's pretty stacked. It's pretty kind of, it's kind of crazy because, okay, so my entire thought process on this movie is, like you said, I appreciate the swing. I just feel like, as much as we've seen from the Coen brothers, as much as like it feel like sometimes when you watch a film, I feel like you get like a sense of like, well, this was like a great, well thought out concept and they made it really well and look how meticulously it's made and all that kind of stuff. This is almost like it's just undercooked for me.
Bit rushed.
Yeah. Not again, the story feels a bit rushed. The execution of everything feels a bit rushed. Like, it's almost like if they just had more time to kind of sit with it.
And it's also dealing with a lot of familiar things. The road trip element, the mob trying to catch something. Yeah. We've seen this in other movies,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, a lot of stuff, it feels very familiar. And then it doesn't go far enough. Because I can totally understand the idea of, like, what was it, No Country for Old Men? Where it's similar.
Maybe their best film ever.
Yeah, and it's, like, similar in the sense of, like, it's, like, on a loose basis, it's similar in terms of concept.
Yeah.
But this one, I feel like they obviously wanted to go a little less serious, a little more comedic. And I just feel like the comedy doesn't land in the same way. Like, it doesn't, I just feel like they didn't get to stew with it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you get to, like, sit, because there are really funny elements about this movie, like you said, but the way it is now, it just doesn't get me where I want to go.
Yeah.
Right? It just doesn't get me all the way to the destination. And don't get me wrong, it's got some cool moments, some funny moments, some really fun moments in general. But there's just a lot of scenes that just feel like, I can live without that. Or like, you know, I wish there was more here in this part or whatever, right? Like, it just feels like there's something missing, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And
sometimes some of these scenes feel like they're too on the head, too on the nose. It's like they're trying to make a statement, but then you're pulling me out of the whole, oh, we're going to give you a punchline as well at the end of this scene. And I'm like, I'm not really all the way there with this whole situation.
I feel like a lot of the comedy doesn't land all the way for me because some of the characters, I just don't like that much, right? If I'm being completely honest.
Any specific ones?
I don't know. Like, even like the cop, her, I just don't care for. I just feel like that character feels almost like a light Melissa McCarthy kind of situation or... A lot of these characters feel like there's, like we were saying before, like I this feels familiar, but it's just not the same kind of cool. Like, for example, like, as much as I like Margaret Qualley, I loved her in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as Pussycat. And this movie feels like almost like they're taking an element of Pussycat and they're just, they did like a weird spin with it. And it's like along that same thought process, but it's like way overproduced, not necessary to do all this kind of, I don't know. There's just something about it that doesn't feel as cool as that character, even though she's supposed to be like the coolest character.
Yeah.
Oh, not the coolest, but like, you know, such a take charge person and
the leader.
Yeah. And like at the end of the day, I just don't get that element of like, okay, well, this is the main character of the story and I should really care about them. I just don't, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of the characters, I just don't really care all the way about a lot of them. The other thing that there was just like very specific scenes that I just thought like the comedy just felt very Dumb and Dumberish sometimes. Like, I don't know, like, it just didn't land. It's too slapstick for me.
Yeah.
Like, there's one scene in particular where the people that were looking for them, that were hunting them down, like the goons, they came, showed up, and all you see is the girls just start screaming, and all they do is just start screaming for way too long. And I could understand the idea of that as like a quick cut, right, landing in like a TV show, but for some reason this was like really long. I don't think it landed for me at all. It was just like an annoying scene to kind of watch, and those kinds of things I think go against the movie, unfortunately. And like, which is funny though, because I think a big positive of the movie is like the henchmen, they're so funny. They like, a lot of their comedy lands for me like very often,
right?
Especially Joey Slotnick, that dude's hilarious, right? Like, very funny. And that's kind of the fun thing that I like about a movie like this, where like maybe I don't love the movie all the way, but there are pockets of what I can kind of be like, well, I still am excited to see what he's going to do.
Right.
I'm still excited to see what Margaret Qualley is going to do.
Sure.
I'm still excited to see what Geraldine Viswanathan is going to do. Yeah, I just, at the end of the day, the cool thing about the movie like this is like, it's one of those things where we watch a movie, we're like, all right, cool, these are people to kind of watch. And I love that about it, because not necessarily every time you're going to see like the best movie ever, someone's best offering they're going to give you. But we're seeing people, even like Coleman Domingo, this might not be his best movie, but we know that guy's having an amazing year. You know, Oscar nominated, having an incredible year.
100%. And also, a film like this, you can just tell, you know, what, you know, if you've watched it or when you do watch it, it's like, it's not the biggest budget movie.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, this is almost like an example of, okay, you can experiment a little bit and kind of get away with it.
Yes.
And in this situation, it hasn't landed for us. Mm-hmm. Maybe it does for other people. It hasn't landed for us, but maybe there's some takeaways, whether it's for Ethan or whether it's for the actors that were involved in this film.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's like almost like a silver lining on this cloud.
Yeah, I agree. I think at the end of the day, it's still a fun movie. You still get hit with like a lot of fun cameos that just show, like Pedro Pascal kind of just sandwiched in the movie is really fun.
Yeah.
Matt Damon, like you said, is just like a fun, like whenever you see Matt Damon in these random cameos,
yeah,
it's always the best, mm-hmm. right? Because whether you're watching like a movie like a Jane Silent Bob or something like that, and like a either like a Matt Damon or what was it? Is it Ben Affleck that shows up in those movies?
Yeah.
I think it's both. I don't know if it's both or one. I'm not sure. But when somebody like that pops up, it's so much fun, right? Yeah. And it's just like a whole twist. Those guys are like massive movie stars and you're in this kind of movie.
Yeah,
it's really funny. But I think that kind of like had like a similar effect. The fact that it was Matt Damon was in this, it almost elevated in my mind. Just 100%. Just the fact that Matt Damon's in it.
Yeah.
But he was great. He was great in his role.
Yeah.
Totally great as a really skeezy... What was it? Senator, whatever it is.
Yeah. Do you think this is the kind of movie at 80 minutes will be like, all right, maybe don't go out of your way to watch it at the theater, but maybe you can just throw it on at home. That's something that people may enjoy just throwing in the background.
You know what? The fact that sometimes I really do think if I watch a movie that's okay in a movie theater, I might not enjoy it so much as if I was home and I was comfortable and I was just chilling.
Yeah.
And I just kind of had this on in the background and like I was just doing my thing. If I'm doing other stuff while this movie's on, I feel like I would really enjoy this movie.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, I understand what you're saying.
There's a lot of movies like that where it might not be the best movie ever, but it's like comfortable.
Right.
This movie could be comfortable because I would know the jokes that were about to land or whatever. Like, yeah. I feel like it could be fun in that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
As far as our categories go, who did you have for best character for Driveway Dolls?
Margaret Qualley as Jamie. I think she has the best lines of dialogue because a lot of her lines are basically the punchlines. And even though most of them didn't land, there were enough that worked okay-ish for me and she's still someone to pay attention to.
100%. I'm such a big fan of Margaret Qualley, like regardless of if I think she's like amazing.
She has screen presence, right?
100%. Yeah. There's something about her, and I always think about like when we watch Sanctuary. That's one of the coolest movies I remember seeing.
Oh my god, I forgot she's in that.
Yeah,
oh, you're
she's
so
fantastic
right.
in that. And I love that performance from her. And yeah, for me though, for this film specifically, I went with Joey Slotnick as one of the goons.
Yeah.
Like, he's so funny. I really think it's just fun, like I said, to find new comedic actors. I really find that there's a lot of these new comedic actors that I'm starting to see. And I hope it results in seeing funnier movies in general because I just love comedy. And I feel like that's a big void that's been happening lately. But as far as best scene goes, who'd you have for that?
I kind of almost referenced it earlier on, but it's Matt Damon in the diner towards the end of the movie. Like you mentioned, it's a great cameo and honestly maybe produced the biggest laugh for me because he's just so damn good in that scene.
He is. Yeah. I feel like any of the scenes with the goons are very funny to me. One of the ones that were really funny was the one where the girls have already picked up the car and now the goons and Coleman Domingo come back and are like, well, where's the car? And they go through that whole sequence and that's really funny. Also, when they go to the cop's apartment and the goons get beat up, that's another funny, like anything that involves them getting like just ridiculed seems to be like right up my funny bone. So I'm down with that. As far as star rating goes, 0 being the worst, 5 being the best. Where'd you end up with this?
I gave it a 2.25. Like I said, gave me a few laughs, a few moments that made me chuckle, but overall just didn't get me all the way there.
Yeah. I feel like I said, middle movie, definitely not like the worst. Like I said, it just didn't end up feeling it the way I would hope to at the end. I know it's supposed to be funny sometimes. Comedy didn't always land. As far as like action, didn't always land as well. But I feel like this is the kind of movie that's going to end up being like a cult hit. It will find an audience, I'm sure. It will have a bunch of people that will ride for it. But I don't think it's going to be everybody's cup of tea, if I'm being completely honest. I went with 3 stars, by the way, if I didn't mention. But yeah, that's everything for Driveway Dolls. Let's get into the last segment of the show. John, can I get your recommendation for the week?
This week, I'm recommending Quincy, the documentary on Quincy Jones, which is available on Netflix. And I actually watched it a second time, and that's why I'm recommending it. I watched it when it first dropped, 6 years ago now? And for some reason, I watched it the other day, and I just wanted to almost be inspired. I felt like I need to watch something that's going to inspire me. Mm-hmm. And I remember having a really good time watching this documentary way back then, and man, it's just incredible. Like, if you're looking to be inspired by true greatness, like, I'm talking true greatness, this is what you have to watch. It ended up winning like a Grammy Award for Best Music Film in 2019 for what that's worth. But regardless, it's just a fascinating thing to see someone from a teenager go through every single decade and touch other people with greatness, whether it be actors or musicians or artists in different genres of music. And it's and he's lived an incredible life, both personally and professionally. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I can't recommend it enough, man.
That's awesome. For me, that's actually funny that you mentioned somebody who you found inspiration from in a movie. My recommendation for this week is Frances Ha, which is Greta Gerwig and Noam Baumbach. They're previous collaboration. Mm-hmm. Basically, the both of them made like this incredible movie about like the value of like self-discovery and friendship. It's really a movie about like learning about yourself. It's just, it's Greta Gerwig's character. It's her acting, by the way. It's her going through life, and she's just like in her early, like her late 20s, and it's just that part of life where people are kind of making transitions, either getting married or having kids or whatever, and she's kind of going through different parts of her life. And it's very interesting. Obviously, I can relate to that in a lot of ways. And yeah. I think it's like very interesting that the way she kind of portrays it, because it feels very genuine, very genuine. Like there's a scene that nothing will spoil anything about this movie, but there's a scene where she's just kind of sitting at like this dinner table, and like these parents are kind of talking about their kids. And then she blurts out like this thing that is like basically anti-kids in like a room full of parents. And I feel like, you know, we can relate to something like that, like just saying some absurd stuff mm-hmm. about like, that's not something I agree with or whatever. Like,
right.
Just something absurd. It's pretty incredible, but it's just such a really, really relatable film in a lot of different ways. Greta Gerwig's performance is really fantastic and so endearing. She's such an endearing character. And I feel like her journey to like become the person that she's hoping to be is very interesting to watch. Very cool perspective. And it also just shows just who she is as like a filmmaker. She's just very talented. And I feel like, especially in this movie, it's an aspiring artist.
Mm.
So she's trying to create art. So I feel like this is one of those films that kind of, it might be them telling a story on the screen, but really it's like kind of them telling their own story in a lot of ways.
That's really cool, because I think a lot of people may only be familiar with Greta Gerwig because of Barbie, and it's always interesting to then go back and see their previous work and see some of the seeds being planted that kind of almost, you can see it in a much more mainstream situation.
Yeah, I think it's great, because when you watch something like Barbie, and it's such a success that it is, when you watch a movie like this, it's almost, it's like the groundwork of why do you love Barbie so much? Why do people respond to Barbie so much? It's because it's like, at the end of the day, they felt something real and genuine, despite the fact that it was this big commercial property.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this movie kind of establishes. It shows you like how they actually make you care about the human being despite whatever surroundings are happening. That's kind of what this movie's all about. It's really an incredible one. Check out Frances Ha. I'm sure it's on whatever streaming service you're familiar with, but that's everything for the show this week. Gentlemen, where can anybody find us?
We are at Screen Off Script on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube Shorts. And if you agree or whether you disagree with our review of Drive Away Dolls, do us a favor. Let us know in the comments. It honestly goes a long way on helping our show get found by new audiences.
Awesome. Thank you for checking us out this week. Take care.